guys of Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Now at 14, you might be thinking offensive tackle. Well, I'm not so sure that Penei Sewell, Rashawn Slater, or Christian Darrisaw, the top three tackles in this draft, will be available to Minnesota at 14. So unless you want to trade up, I don't think that you will be getting someone of that caliber. Someone like Elijah Vera Tucker, potentially, the tackle guard from USC, who played some tackle in college but projects more as a guard in the NFL, could very easily be available to the Vikings at 14. But will Spielman consider that a reach for a player he might be able to get in a later round? Only time will tell.
I want a mock!
Courtney Cronin, little offensive line speculation there on ESPN. All right, can you pod that down a little bit, Dex, there? Sorry, a little technical
pod
issues.
You, pod you down or pod
the
down?
Phone. I think the phone. We'll bring Randy in a second.
Look at you being high maintenance.
Mackie and Judd here. It's draft week. We are 2 days away from the National Football League draft and the Vikings changing their franchise forever with, I don't know, an offensive lineman that may or may not
a running out. Back and so linebacker we'll with their two top 10 picks they're going to get.
Yeah. So, boys, we'll get to talking Twins. We have a lot of gripes off of, I don't know what Rocco was thinking yesterday. I don't even know if Rocco knows what Rocco was thinking. The Wolves beat the Jazz last night for the, what, third time this season?
Yes.
But we're going to start with the filet mignon of today's show, maybe even the filet mignon of all of our shows so far this year, because our friend Randy in Cottage Grove, RandyVikes69 on Twitter, who's a very prolific mock drafter, mind you, he has correctly predicted two of the last three Vikings first-round picks. He nailed Mike Hughes. He nailed Justin Jefferson. And he has been his health is fine, apparently. He trailed off after explaining getting three vaccines for COVID, all three of the vaccines, which is not recommended by doctors. He has called in, and we're going to bring him in just a second for his seven-round Vikings mock draft presented by our friends at Federated Mutual Insurance Company. Federated has been around for over 100 years, based in Owatonna. They're one of us. They are Minnesota sports fans, for better or worse, and they've been giving peace of mind and resources for risk management and protection to business owners for a long, long time. That's a partnership that you're going to want to maximize your business. FederatedInsurance.com. Find out more about MyShield, which is a trusted resource. And remember, at Federated, it's our business to protect yours. Is he alive? Randy Vikes 69. Is he alive? Hello, Randy.
Yeah, it's Randy.
Hi, Randy. It's us.
I'm fine. Good. I'm fine. You had a scare, as they say, with too many of the vaccines, but I'm good. And now that what they're saying now is, if anything, I'm just, triple covered. So it's good.
Triple covered. Mm-hmm. I like that. So did you end up in the hospital that day, or just to go back on that? What happened?
I woke up on the just on the floor of my truck. Jeez. But I woke up and kind of felt just dizzy, and then a little woozy, and then I called the nurse hotline and told them what happened, and they said I should come in, and I just decided to sleep it off.
The nurse
the nurse.
I don't even want to know.
I feel like that's not the first time you've called the nurse hotline. Am I right?
Yeah. Well, different sorts of hotlines, but this is a medical one. And they give good advice.
What's your hotline stud stable?
It's personal. Jeff, it's personal, but I do the Alina is good. They always give good, friendly advice.
I'm just glad you're okay. I'm glad
me too.
We're all glad that you're okay, Randy.
Right back at you. Yeah. They give you this little card that says I got, here's my name, and I got my vaccine. But I had three other cards, obviously. And so I decided to just eat them. I ate them. What? I put them in a blender with a smoothie, and they're gone now. So, that's the good thing is that people say, where's your vaccine card? It's literally in me now. So that's so we're good.
It's just inside you. All right.
Well, actually, probably science says it's not inside you anymore, but that's really beside the point.
It's more of a sort of a ceremonial, sort of like people burn a jersey. And this is, in my case, just wanted to make it official. All three were good, and I'm right back in tip-top mocking form. And I actually put some of the dating on hold to be able to focus on this, and I'm really excited to bring it to you guys. And as you know, I'm going to do every pick for every team, all seven rounds.
I just want to make sure that we set some ground rules off the top here. Just for some of it's for time constraint reasons. You know, we know that you're a prolific mock drafter and you put a ton of research into this thing. We don't have time for the full every team seven round mock draft. So just the ground rules that
shapes up. How are you supposed to learn the story of every draft is like a storybook. You don't know how it unfolds till you start to see how it unfolds.
And listen, we don't dispute that. We just want the footnotes. Okay, you can tell the whole story on your website or your Twitter account, wherever. But we just want the Vikings picks for all the round. I think they have 10 picks right now. We would appreciate if you would keep
that. We're going to get more than that. There's trades in here and everything.
Okay, well, that brings me to ground rule number two, which is we would prefer no trades, okay? Just no trades and brief descriptions of players to keep it moving.
Well, that jacks up the whole thing. I mean, my round one guy is that we trade back, and now he's going to seem like a reach.
Okay, well, if you get it – okay, well, just pick him at 14, and if you get it right, we're still going to give you credit.
Well, he's a stud, but I don't know what they're going to take. All right. Okay, you know you're putting sponsors on my thing. I heard. I thought I couldn't do that.
Well, no, we can. It's our show.
Do that. Yeah, and you tried to do that last time, and it got bad.
I did do it, and then you hosed it, and they didn't come through.
Yeah. So,
okay, fine. I guess I'll just do the Vikes, and no trades, huh? All right. This wasn't the bill of goods I was sold. But
who'd you talk to?
To Jeff.
First of all, there is no Jeff on the show.
There's no Jeff, yeah.
All right. Well, here we go.
Okay, this is Randy in Cottage Grove's six round, right? Vikings mock draft 2021. Let's fire it up.
Well, in round one, I guess we're going to take him at 14 because I can't tell you where we're really going to take him. Now round one, we're going to go ahead and take Tevin Jenkins. Offensive tackle at Oklahoma State.
Ooh.
He's kind of a reach at 14, but if you read between the lines, that ain't where we're going to take him, but I guess that's where we're taking him, according to these bozos, so that's fine.
So you've got to trade down. You've got to trade down for Tevin Jenkins, yeah?
Maybe not. Maybe that didn't happen, so that's fine.
Hold on. This is very interesting. I mean, whether they take him at 14 or whether they trade back, I don't know that we've seen many mocks with Tevin Jenkins going to the Vikings in the first round, but Pro Football Focus has him as one of the handful of best tackles, a first round grade tackle.
He's a stud.
So, Judd and Declan, what are your thoughts on Tevin Jenkins' offensive tackle?
My curiosity is this: is this the pick that you were so close to revealing to us a few weeks back when you realized that you had such a great idea that you were going to call Rick first and then tell us, Randy?
No, I pivoted off of that idea.
Can you tell us what that was now?
It was a QB. I'll leave it at that.
Oh,
did you ever get a hold of Rick?
No, he doesn't. He doesn't return the emails.
Oh,
did you try calling?
Not anymore. He used to. He used to be more cordial, but I guess he's busy. Anywho, Tevin Jenkins is going to be the pick in round one, and it ain't going to happen at 14, but that's fine. Let's go to 78. I guess I'll just go slot for all these picks. No trades. Okay, fine.
Yeah, we would appreciate that. Okay.
Another lineman, 78, really going to fortify, and this is going to be Quinn Manners from Whitewater. This is a school that Wisconsin Whitewater doesn't get its due. A lot of people like to give NDSU its due. This is a school that kicks out some studs, and you know, Quinn Miners is—he's going to look good in purple, and he's a versatile lineman, and he's not a reach at 78. In fact, he's a value.
Do you scout this school, Randy?
I've been to some games of theirs, sure. Sure.
Just seems, yeah. I mean, I get that he's a prospect, but like Wisconsin Whitewater, I mean, what kind of teams are you really playing? You're going to go from Whitewater to the NFC North?
He's going to play on Sundays.
Third round seems high, Randy. I'm not going to lie to you right now.
I've heard they're like the Alabama Crimson Tide of D3 football.
Well, you know, here's the problem. In the way my mock falls, we get a second rounder back, but you're not letting me do that. So here we are in the third. We're taking Miners. Now we go to 90. And Zim's going to get a new toy, as they say. Jadarius Robinson, Florida State, he can really fly off the edge. And he's going to be a fun bookend there for Daniel Hunter. Jadarius Robinson is a great value at 90. I love that pick. 119 now. There's a lot of different ways we could go at buck 19, but I really like Tyler Shevlin. Tyler Shevlin, LSU. He's an D-line, you know, inside D-line guy who can move around a little bit. If you watch a lot of LSU games, you know, Shevlin kind of goes a little bit under the radar, but he is a stud, and he's someone who might seem like a little bit of a reach at 119, but he'll work out. He definitely will. Buck 25 now.
A lot of meat and potatoes here. I think that's four linemen that you've drafted so far here in the first four picks, so... I think we should have some fewer problems with the offensive and defensive line now.
That's where football happens. Is in the trenches.
He is right.
If you don't move, I don't care if you're a Pat Mahomes or what. If you can't move bodies, you can't move the rock. And I mean, there's just watch.
I like how you're thinking.
Who's the guy who does the reviews, Baldy. He knows it all starts and ends right there.
I agree. Baldy. I don't know why Baldy isn't just the Vikings assistant GM now.
He's a stud.
Oh, yeah. Big time stud.
Okay, you want me to move off the line? Here you go. This is what you get now. Okay, now you're going to get a cornerback at 125. Israel Makabu from South Carolina. Mm. This kid has got an absolute rotational bubble. He can move left. He can move right. He can cover people even once he blows coverage because he's just got a body that can get up and twist. Israel Makamu is going to be a guy who puts a little insurance in that secondary for him. Might be good, especially with what's going on with Gladney.
All right,
and then let's keep.
So what'd you say? He can really move and twist. Does he?
He's got good space. He can do stuff in the air. He can move around in the air.
It's important.
Move around in the air. So,
Superman like.
Just jump up. This ain't basketball. You don't jump up. You got to jump, and you got to be able to have the wingspan to bust up plays. You know, what if you blew that coverage and you still get a finger on the ball?
Sounds like a Marvel superhero. I can't believe he's still available at pick 125, quite frankly.
Yeah, Israel McConnell, 125.
All right.
134, this is another guy who, if he falls, just get. This is going to make Zim snug because this is going to be yet another steal. And this is Talona Hufanga. You guys know Talona Hufanga from USC. He's a safety that will fit very nicely into this system. He's versatile, you know. But Hufanga, he could start year one. I mean, he really could start year one. And you're getting him at a value at 134. A lot of people want to say, you know, why don't the Vikes take a QB? And you guys know I'm down on because I think he sucks. He's overpaid. He's a fake guy. Well, here's a guy who could be kind of that steal. You know, and they're probably not going to get one of the top QBs. Even though Kellen Mond, who I love, is kind of climbing the charts. They're probably not going to overpay for him. But here's a guy under the radar. Keep an eye on Jamie Newman, QB from Georgia.
Ooh.
At 143, it would definitely be a good place to take a flyer on potential QB of the future there.
Wow. If they drafted Jamie Newman, how many bad games from Kirk until you make that switch?
Till I make it one.
Wow.
Oh, just week two. Week two and
no,
Jamie Newman.
No, he's in a preseason game. If Kirk struggles in that first preseason game, he's gone.
Well, first of all, I already would have shipped his ass.
Yeah.
You know, I would have made Shanahan an offer he can't refuse. But they didn't do that. They decided to pony up even more cash. To this bozo, but you know he can go to Pizza Ranch and smile his little fake smile and whatever, that's fine. But the future is going to come sooner or later. And Zim, you ride in on that horse. You might be riding out on that same horse as far as Cousins goes.
Wow, that's
all I'm saying.
That's awfully cryptic.
Yeah,
Randy's down on Zim and Kirk.
Well, he hitches his wagon to that bozo. So Newman could be the new guy. Who knows? At 157, right. Here's another offensive toy. And this guy's a stud. If he's there at 157, take him and don't look back. And that's John Bates from Boise State, the tight end. Again, he plays on that blue turf. He'll have to get used to the green turf, but it's not a big adjustment. A lot of people say it is. It's not. John Bates at Boise State, you know, again, if he's there at 157, that's a fine reach, a little bit of a reach. It could be him, could be Kenny Yeboah, but I went with Bates.
What would the adjustment be, Randy, from the blue turf to the green turf?
Just picking up the ball. Same with the baseball. And, you know, it's a batter's eye, same thing. You know, you're trying to pick up the ball. It's got a little bit different look.
All right.
Yeah, Judd. I mean, sometimes
never really thought about the blue turf.
The football contrasts better with the blue sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's easier to see the ball. Why do you think Boise State's so good? They can see the ball better than other
PCL-like, right? Lots of home runs. Okay, I got you. Thank you.
Yeah, you take a peek at the turf. You know, kind of puts a little bit of a different sheen on the rock. And 168, got to get a wide receiver at some point. And they're going to do it at 168 with Anthony Schwartz from Auburn. And Schwartz is the kind of guy who, you know, he's not going to dazzle you, but he's a great possession guy. He can definitely hold on to the ball, and that's something that, you know, we can't have the butterfingers happening. I mean, we just cannot.
Listen, Randy, I mean, I don't know a lot about some of these guys, but isn't Anthony Schwartz one of the fastest players in the draft?
Sure, but it doesn't matter if you're fast if you can't hold on to it. You know, who's the guy we got who was fast who couldn't hold on to it?
And just want to make sure you've done all. Just make sure you've done all your film study. I just want to just testing you. Just testing you.
How much Auburn are you watching?
I mean, more than you, it sounds like.
Wow. You've managed to tick him off like three times, Bill. Why are you pushing him?
He's not a razzle-dazzle guy.
He's full of vaccines and vaccine cards. No, Randy, keep going. I apologize for my partner.
All right, 199. And this is, again, all these picks are goofy now because you wouldn't let me do the trades. And so Schwartz is the pick there. All right, fine. And then 199, another linebacker, just a guy to throw into the mix, Ernest Jones from South Carolina. He's decent. You know, he take a flyer on him. Fine. I don't know. The whole draft, this is not how I wanted it to go down, but maybe it'll be fine.
So I think, well, first of all, amazing job, Randy. Just all the research that you just put in there. Congratulations on pulling through here. How many hours?
2,000.
2,000 hours in this year?
When did you start?
I'm at home with the COVID. So everybody had to be at home. What else are you going to do,
Randy? I mean, that's an average of 5.5 hours a day if you worked on the mock draft for 7 days a week all year.
Oh.
It's a full time job.
Yeah, it is. It's mostly a labor of love, unless you get a sponsor, in which case you'd really like to kind of come through for them.
Speaking of which,
that's unfortunate that didn't happen.
PXG Minneapolis is your absolute beacon if you're a golf fan here. It's a golfer's paradise. The new Gen 4 golf clubs have landed, and this mock draft by Randy and Cottage Grove is powered by the Gen 4 drivers, fairways, hybrids, and irons. They also have all kinds of great swag. Spring and summer apparel has just arrived in store. Find it all at PXG Minneapolis in Southdale Center and find out more at pxg.com/Minneapolis. Again, Randy and Cottage Grove's mock draft, 7 rounds of Vikings draft picks, is brought to you by PXG Minneapolis.
It's got a sponsor.
Okay, well, that's 2 then, so here it goes. Thank you for listening to my mock draft. If you're ever in the East Metro area and looking for a delicious way to get a hot meal and good beverages, check out the 5-8 Club.
Oh.
They're on...
Wait, you can't do this.
On are they night. Paying you, or no. You just like the 5-8 Club?
The 5-8 Club is a family-owned business located on McKnight Road.
Yep.
And just north of Highway 94 with delicious Juicy Lucy's and specials on craft beer, shots, and pull tabs. Yeah. Please visit 5-8 Club at either location and learn more on their website at www.58club.com.
He's gone. Dang it.
I don't think he could do that. Like, I think we're going to have a problem there.
That was a staple.
No, I don't think he's getting paid. I think he just likes the 5-8 club.
I think we got to find out because he sounded like a guy who might be getting paid. That's
a
pretty good read.
Staple at the golf fan. I grew up 2 miles from there. We were there twice a week growing up. It's a great spot.
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah. Can they throw some cash?
That exact spot.
I got to tell you guys, Juicy Lucy's?
No, they're
overrated.
Yep, I agree.
I'll just take the cheese right on top of the burger. I don't want it to burn my tongue.
You know what? I loved
them with you on this.
Six places.
I loved them as a kid because of the novelty, and now it's like it's fine. But I mean,
it's like stuffed crust pizza, right? Like, there's cheese in the crust. It's like,
here's my thing too.
Thin crust is fine.
I am not a deep dish pizza fan. It's the only pizza I'm not a fan of.
Trash.
What?
I don't.
Trash.
I love pizza.
Both of you.
I love pizza. Yeah,
it's not pizza.
It's too much.
It's not
and
pizza.
The cheese. Speaking of cheese, it's the coagulated cheese. It's not. It's sort of gross.
Yeah, it's
like I'm not grossed out by much. I think it's sort of gross.
Wait, you think deep dish pizza is gross?
It's
gross. One thing to say you're not that into it. Say it's gross.
I don't want that much cheese at any one time. Like I like cheese, but like it's just too much.
Are you talking about like the, like there's deep dish pizza that you get at a Minnesota restaurant. I mean like you go to, wait for an hour and a half and get the real deal at Gino's East.
Yeah, wow. That's what it's too much.
Lou Malnati's?
I'm with Judd on this. It's trash. It's not good.
I love pizza,
I don't even know you guys.
It's not for me.
Yeah, I agree. Rami Makhlouf right now is running into the studio with these hot takes.
Oh, God, he got all mad last night.
Well,
because,
all right, I will defend him
Dan
there.
Chavis,
you guys and your love of ketchup is borderline unhealthy.
On a hot dog.
Ketchup is the worst condiment with mayonnaise. That and mayonnaise need to be blasted into the sun. If we got rid of those condiments, we'd be a better place. We'd be a much better place in society.
Ketchup is a staple of life. And plus, it's on a hot dog. Like, I can totally see the... Don't put ketchup on like a steak. That makes total sense to me.
Okay. But, says this fraud
dog?
Right here. I once went to a bar in St. Paul with Judd after a show, and Judd ordered a chicken Caesar wrap and put a glob of ketchup and dipped a chicken Caesar wrap
in ketchup.
It was great.
Yeah, it was awesome.
You've done it. You've done it twice then. I saw it happen.
I did it in Florida too. Oh, I've done it all the time.
Oh, my God.
I like ketchup on as much as possible.
Oh, my God.
Chicken Caesar wrap. So the Caesar dressing and the ketchup.
Yeah, it was great.
All in one.
It was delicious. It was absolutely delicious.
I love how Judd's like, if it's just a hot dog we're talking about here.
No, but
Caesar.
I'm chicken sandwich too.
But I can see the steak thing of you shouldn't put a – I can see that. It doesn't bother me personally, but I can see that one. But a hot dog, I mean, Rami acts like hot dogs are special.
They are special. They're very special food, yes.
Yeah, you know what they deserve? Ketchup on them.
Ugh.
I'm okay with the ketchup on the hot dog. And hot dogs are sacred. Both things can be true.
But it's just – it's natural. Ugh. There are some things in life – that are natural. I won't get into them all. But there are some things in life that fit together.
Coming up next on Mackie and Judd, is a hot dog a sandwich? 651-646.
No.
We're going to win, Twins. Watch me make a pitching change.
Player get the mound visits, and I have to take it up Barrios.
How many times have we been out to see Barrios? Wes Johnson came out once earlier, but I forgot.
Hey.
So what the hell happened on that?
I'd like to talk about it.
Do we have a clip? Do we have Rocco talking about this?
Yep. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so Rocco. Okay,
I was that's on me, and I was locked in on something else at the time. I actually called down to the bullpen to get Robles going, and yes, obviously not a great moment, but obviously I'm more concerned right now about everything that went on in the game and the result and what happened, and a little less so on that. But yeah, that's what happened.
And by the way, I am doing fine. I am great here in Cleveland. Nothing is going wrong. I am not being held against my will by my team.
Okay, I'm just going to ask the question. It's a question that I think it's an uncomfortable question that the three of us feel obligated to be the first ones to pose. All right. Not demanding this, just asking this. If they lose a couple more games here, would they fire Rocco?
Now, I think this is a very interesting question because I think something's going on here way more than we know, okay? They're not just playing bad baseball. Phil and I, and Dex might be close by now, have watched probably thousands of big league games. I'm not talking about Legion Ball, Babe Ruth. I'm talking about big league games, okay? I don't remember ever seeing, and I might be forgetting, but I don't remember ever seeing a manager come out after the pitching coach and not realize that he has to take the pitcher out. I've never seen that before. I think something's up here, and I don't know what, and I'm not going to recklessly speculate because it's beyond the norm of sports speculation. That being said, no, I don't think, Phil, that they would fire him, but this just continues to feel wrong. Something's off here, and I don't know what.
Yeah, and this is pure speculation, pure speculation. But in the last year, year and a half in our country, I think we've seen more tension than we've seen in a long, long time in terms of personal beliefs and science beliefs and even just like there's a million different things that we disagree on, political, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure.
And again, this is – I am not getting any info on this. This is just me speculating. When you're already off to a rough start and a couple guys get hurt and then your star defensive shortstop – and I'm not even going to get into the vaccination part. I'm just saying like the human nature part mm-hmm. – makes a decision and then everyone in the clubhouse is put at risk for COVID and – five or six guys are put on the injured list, and now you've got guys hurt, and you're scrambling to put together rosters, and it's chaos. I don't think the coaches and the players all in harmony are just going to say, yeah, okay, whatever, things happen. I think there's tension. It feels like there's probably some tension, and it doesn't feel like there's this amazing chemistry that we saw with the Bomba Squad a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think the COVID stuff probably has worn on them more than just like the lack of having starting players on the field. Mm-hmm. Not saying they can't overcome it, but I think it's been a huge underlying theme. It's whether it's just the routines being thrown off or the fact that the Twins now have to go through like an extra month of COVID protocols that other teams that have 85% vaccination rates. Like I wouldn't dismiss this angle, I guess, is what I'm saying to you guys.
So there's two things too off of this. One is Rocco's had a bad year, and he has made a lot of judgment calls that have backfired. And what makes baseball great is if those judgment calls are right, we praise you and say, man, Rocco Baldelli, the Zen of Rocco. And if they don't go well, we rightfully so second guess and criticize. And he deserves heat for decisions that he has made. What happened last night with Barrios is not a second guess of a decision. It's a forgetfulness that doesn't happen in baseball. Like it is a flat out mistake that is embarrassing. That can't, and he can say I had my mind on other things. He can say whatever he wants. This is embarrassing. This is not a why did you turn to column A again, which is a great discussion, and that's a second guess. This is a dude. If you're telling the truth, you forgot three batters before you came out. And my feeling initially was, I wonder if Barrios told him to bleep off and he got sort of flustered and was like, okay, stay in. And then the home plate ump said he can't stay in because it was just so weird. And so I am willing to go down the path that there's way more to that story than we know. But let me bring up something else that every time I have seen a team in sports deal with this, it's been a issue for that season. Okay, Phil? And we have not broached this yet. And I am in no way, shape, or form saying that if this is a problem, it shouldn't be. That's the death of Mike Bell. Okay?
Yeah.
When Tony Sprano died, think about how that year went. And think about how Zimmer was. Mm-hmm. And think about how it sort of just all crumbled. The first time I covered a team that had experienced a death was the Packers had a scout, I think his name was Mark Hatley, and it was one of the 2 years I covered the Packers, I think it was 2004, and he was found dead in his bed of a heart attack right before that season, and they eventually made the playoffs, but they got off to a really rough start too. And my feeling is this. To succeed in pro sports, you need focus. Like, it's all-consuming. It's all-consuming. It's why sports don't care about holidays. It's why they don't care about the norm. Because you are, and Phil, you've seen the same thing. These guys are hyper-focused on one thing. And, like, the rest of life sort of gets shoved out, right? Like, you know, the family, things like that. For the course of the season, the most important thing, this might not be the best thing for people, but the most important thing is their team and their sport. And we haven't talked a lot about the death of Mike Bell, but the death of Mike Bell was very sudden. He was Rocco's bench coach. Because we didn't get to go in the clubhouse last year, I have no idea if guys loved him or what, but I can tell you, having been in the clubhouse 2 years before, you know, Derek Shelton was in Rocco's office and was like Rocco's confidant constantly. All I'm saying is this seems to go beyond the norm of a slump or just a team that's like scuffling. And look, I think when you introduce death into a group of people who are young men who are athletes, who probably think about death never. And now this guy's just gone. Like, it didn't take months. He's just gone. I think that can't be dismissed. And it would not surprise me if Baldelli is also really struggling here. Because I will say this. I don't think the way that he acts and talks is an act. I think he's a very sensitive guy. Like, I think he's very much in tune with how people are feeling. And if he and Mike Bell were super tight, I don't think that could be dismissed.
Yeah, it's a really, really interesting point. And the Sperano example is a great one. And that the Vikings, the sudden nature of it and the impact and the effect that he had and the respect that he commanded, guys loved Tony Sperano. He coached hard. But that Vikings team, mentally, emotionally, was never the same. I mean, were they thinking about it every waking second? Like, it's the fourth quarter and they allow a big drive defensively, or they don't get a first down offensively. Is everything directly tied to Tony Sperano's absence? No, but it was definitely something that they had a hard time dealing with. And a lot of guys would tell you it took the juice out of the season. Like, it was hard to be as enthusiastic and engaged and top of the step, so to speak, right? When you just lost someone that was a huge part of everyone's lives. And like you, I don't have a ton of information because, you know, just the closed off nature of how the Twins have had to operate the last couple of years. But that dude was part of their daily operation for a long time and built some relationships. And you don't just shrug your shoulders and get over it, you know? And so, whether it's that, whether it's the COVID tear through the clubhouse and the injuries and now the slow start and blowing some games late, it just feels like there's a heavy weight on this team right now. And some of these excuses or reasons are valid, right? I mean, there's been a couple that I turned my head sideways at. Like yesterday, Dan Hayes from The Athletic mentioned on Twitter that the Twins have only had batting practice before games like four times all season because they only take batting practice before night games. Well, you know, not to pull a back in my day, I told Declan this on the Score North Instagram Live emergency Twins gripe session yesterday. But I covered the Twins beat from 2010 through 2013, covered plenty of day games. Like, did they have a lot of day games where they didn't take batting practice? Of course. Did they take batting practice before day games sometimes? Yes. It's not illegal. Like, if your offense isn't going, you can't just stick to this mantra that, well, we let our guys rest before day games. They can sleep in a little bit longer or whatever. And they, you know, day games are for preserving energy as much as you can going into the actual game itself. Well, if your offense isn't clicking, maybe once a week during a day game, you should take some pregame batting practice. Like, so there's reasons that make sense that are hard to overcome. And then there's some other things like putting Alex Colome in close games still when he's clearly not right, yep, that are fixable and don't make sense. And all of it adds up to one of the worst starts in recent franchise history. This is a worse start than the 2011 Twins had. That team, I think, through 21 games was like 9-12, I want to say. Mm-hmm. So this is a worse start than that. I don't think they're out of it yet, but if they lose, like, they're to the point now where if they lose like two more games, it's just straight over. It's going to be almost impossible to come back from 10 games below 500 this early in the season. So, yeah.
Two things, too. Also, their record in 2016 was identical to this, too. They were 7-14 when they went on to lose 101 baseball games in 2016. And to your point about Mike Bell, so I was watching the Cleveland broadcast yesterday, and I don't know if this was said, too, on Bally Sports North, But the Cleveland broadcaster basically alluded to the point when Baldelli screwed up the mound visit that said, this is where your bench coach comes in handy. They pretty much flat out said, if you had a bench coach who was your right-hand man, this is where that would be a situation because he essentially forgot the mound visits. So, I mean, they were subtle about it because obviously Mike Bell's passing. And they promoted someone, right? They promoted someone to his role. So there is someone there. It's not like the job is completely vacant. But they basically said the same thing we're saying, where that's where a guy like Mike Bell would have stepped in and probably have prevented that situation from happening.
This entire team to me feels like it's not focused, and I don't know why. Like it just feels like there's a lack of general focus on a daily basis, and they can't get it. And my question is why, and I'm spitballing here as to if you need to be as focused as possible, which a baseball team does, and you can't, why not?
Yeah. Another layer to add on top of this, it's so hard to quantify, but Byron Buxton is now out with a knee injury, and they're saying it's something that's been plaguing him all season. I believe it's patella tendinitis is what they're
the kneecap,
classifying
right?
it as. Yeah, and it just flares up sometimes, and other people who've had it I've heard say, you know, sometimes you just have a bad day with it, and then it goes back down. Now, he still is performing at a ridiculously high level, so if he's been playing through it, it hasn't impacted him too much. But I think it broaches the question with the hamstrings that we've seen and the foot, and not just with him, with the whole team so far this year, and now the knee, and they've had guys just sit out because they're not feeling good or whatever, upper respiratory or stomach ailments. And again, I'm just posing questions. Are the Twins one of the unluckiest teams ever through the first 3 weeks of a season where they just have all these ailments that are knocking guys out for stretches? Sano, Donaldson, Buxton, Arraez missed a game because he was feeling sick, et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. And COVID, et cetera. Or are they just like, now with COVID, you can't play through, you're put on a list, but, or do they just err so far on the side of never playing through discomfort that as soon as a guy has any sort of sore blank or my stomach is feeling this way, that it's just automatic that you don't play that day? I don't know the answer, but it seems like they miss a lot of games for a lot of things.
Yeah, and the Buxton thing to me, though, is just it's its own special category of it's always something. And I don't even, to go back, I don't even blame him. So I am not saying he's soft. I have no idea, okay? He certainly seems like a guy who's wired right. So my inclination would be to say he's not soft, but it is always something when it comes to Buxton. And like you literally now can't go a month with saying, you know what, he's just going to play. It's going to be fine. And as much as Patrick jokes about it, yes, I think the Twins err too far on the side of caution at times. They for sure do. But that being said, you know, with Byron, This is why you needed, and Phil, I think that you advocated for this a year ago, and I certainly did this past spring. This is why you needed to go sell a veteran, viable center fielder on being on your roster, signing him, and saying Byron gets hurt a lot. And you can play some left field, too. Like, there's nothing wrong with we signed a veteran guy. He can play center when Buxton's out, and you know what? He can play left field too because he's going to go get baseballs. He's athletic. That's great. But this is why I really think if you wanted to contend, you need a person that you can plug in, and it can't be Jay Cave. It can't be Jay Cave. What sort of bugs me right now is, okay, it's a weird year, and guys do get hurt, and COVID's not new now, right? Were you really prepared depth-wise, and I'm not talking having true starting Hall of Fame all-star players, okay? But were you really prepared depth-wise? Because it doesn't seem like it. Jake Cave is not, I mean, if we had sat down in December, Phil, and started to go through the roster, and I said to you, okay, when it comes to Buxton, he's going to get hurt. And my answer to you is, but we got Jake Cave. What would you say to me?
Yeah, I would say I don't want Jake Cave being tied after 21 games for like the fourth most plate appearances on the team.
Exactly. You know, and
that's what's happening right now.
Astudillo, you know, okay, he could play lots of places. That's great. That's fine. He is potentially comic relief in the clubhouse for a long season. That's fine. But if Sano gets hurt, we're going to play him a ton. I would say no. Yeah. No, that's not a championship caliber move. That is what the Pittsburgh Pirates do move. And right now you're not as good as the Pirates.
Since we're airing our grievances here, too, I wanted to pull this up as well. You were asking a couple weeks ago about pitch framing because you had a theory about Ryan Jeffers.
I got rants on this now, too. Yeah.
And I'm trying to decipher this on baseballsavant.com. So baseballsavant.com tracks catcher framing. And it looks like both Mitch Garver and Ryan Jeffers are right in the middle of the pack. They're not the worst, but they're not the best in terms of converting close pitches to strikes, you know, those pitches that are, or making sure that close pitches are called strikes if they're in the strike zone.
Right.
But there's been some, there was two glaring ones for sure in that game yesterday where Ryan Jeffers is just like, he's framing a pitch like a junior high catcher would.
Yes.
He's like moving his glove a half a foot, right? Instead of making a tweak. And I know you texted us yesterday. There was, I can't remember the one, it was like in this, I think there's a reliever in the game or something, but like little things like that, even that just stand out now, where you just need a little edge in a close game and your catcher is framing a pitch incorrectly or something. And it goes against you.
All right. I got a question for you. Cause I might be wrong here. Like I'm getting old. I might be forgetful now, but when pitch framing became a thing, which I think it became a real thing when you were covering the beat still, right? Like it became important and trying to steal strikes and or i.e. just cheat. I felt like we used to on the radio show go through a list that you had of guys that could frame, and that they were like the artistes of framing. Like those guys knew how to subtly move the glove, right? Like, okay, pitch is a little bit outside, but I'm just going to move it back a little bit. And we talked about, oh my God, that's such a great attribute to have. And, you know, there's guys that can do that. Is it just me, or has this become now jerking the ball around the zone, to your point, like a high school kid would? Because I see, and it's Jeffers, Garver to a certain degree. I do think he's a little bit more up to date on how to do it, adroit at how to do it. But do you feel like now we see more catchers literally jerk the ball around? And I think they cost their pitchers strikes because the subtlety was just to move slightly. And now it's like pitches outside and you're taking it and you're bringing it like into a middle of the zone strike.
Well, now umpires know that this is a thing more than ever. Like they've always known it's been a thing, but now there's like MLB's website has a stat page showing you. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
Twins catchers compared to the two Twins catchers, Jeffers and Garver, are both right around league average pitch framers this season so far. but like umpires know that these catchers are going to school on trying to trick them. Now, this is all going to be obsolete in like 3 years if baseball comes to its senses and just puts an electronic strike zone in play. Then a catcher can sit back there with a cocktail with his leg out like Tony Pena used to. And he can let the ball hit him in the chest protector with no one on base, and it won't matter. The ball will have crossed where it will have crossed. But there's a couple zones with Jeffers, like when you get to the inside corner, high and low, that he is really, really bad at converting those pitches. There's a couple others that he's actually really good and like way above average, more toward the bottom of the zone. But top of the zone, he's below average in a lot of ways. I think he's trying to take pitches and bring them down in a more animated fashion. But it's definitely a thing in baseball where you have to learn how to trick the umpire, but you can't be too obvious about it. And they know you're trying to trick them too. So even if you frame something perfectly, it might be a reverse psychology thing where they're like, I don't know. Did you twitch
and
your
you glove? And you don't need to frame every pitch. If it's a bad pitch, don't try and frame it. Because you don't No, but I think the key used to be the subtlety of the frame is what the umps respected. And now it's like, that pitch was a pitch out, but you brought it in the middle of the strike zone. So, yeah, sure, that's a strike. Last gripe about the Twins, just quickly, okay? Derek Falvey, you came from Cleveland. You were supposed to find the pitchers or a pitcher like the last pitcher for the Indians last night who came over from Texas in the Kluber trade. That's the type of guy you're supposed to get here. The Kluber trade was considered not that great, and because people didn't know who the players coming from Texas were. But that last pitcher that they used, you guys, through Absolute Gas, was fantastic. That's what you want.
Emmanuel Clase, right?
Class A.
Emmanuel Clase.
But I mean, that's the definition of where you're like, I can find pitching.
Yep. Yeah, he was ridiculous. And, you know, I do appreciate, I still think Alex Colomé was a good signing, and eventually I think he's going to snap out of it, but he's already done so much damage. Like, he's already cost them, like, four games. So, and part of it's on them. If a guy's not right, you got to find a way to not, I mean, literally put anyone out there in that situation. Was Jorge Alcala available? Like, who could you put out there in that spot? So, yeah, their season is absolutely hanging in the balance. If it's not already over, like, there, and I don't think it is, but their season is in the balance these next handful of games. If I know that in 2011, they were 20 games under .500. They were 17-37 after the first 2 months and brought it all the way back to five games under .500. They made a huge run.
Yep.
But then injuries and age and different things and their lack of pitching. This is a better roster, I think, than that one on paper. But you can't just bank on, all right, well, we'll get hot in July and August. Like, now the Royals are five games up on you, and they might be a worse team, but guess what? We're a month into the season, and you got to make up ground on them and the White Sox and Cleveland.
Yep, exactly.
So, anyhow, all right, that was sort of therapy. Just to end the show on a happy note, the Minnesota Timberwolves are clearly on track to compete for the Western Conference Championship next year. If you go by the rule that they are dominating the best team in the West, they've just run out of time and schedule this year, boys. If they just had a couple more months of schedule.
Argument. The runway argument.
Ran out of runway.
I love the runway argument.
But last night, D'Lo had one of his best games of the year last night. The Wolves gave like a 10-0 run up in the final couple minutes, and then they bared down and they won that game. But Towns was excellent. Ant Edwards was mostly terrible offensively throughout the entire game, but he grabbed a bunch of rebounds. He was passing the ball.
Yep.
He was active. Declan's guy, Jaden McDaniels, hit a big three and played some great defense last night.
Swipe in the post at the end of the game. That was game saving.
Great play.
I was texting with Gerson afterwards, like, great pick, Gerson. Seriously, great pick.
I told you.
You guys
are
tight like that.
Excuse me, he texted me. He actually texted me, and then we exchanged some pleasantries.
Yeah. What did you think? What did you think, Dex? Yeah. So, I mean, that was super fun. These last two games, congratulations to the Timberwolves. Their first back-to-back wins since the first two games of the season. What an accomplishment. I think streamers and balloons fell from the top of Target Center at the end of that game last night.
Hey, don't laugh. They used to.
For every win.
The Bulls win. They did for the Bulls win. They fell from the stream. Yeah. I think that we are going to spend a lot of time in the coming year now, once the 2021-22 season starts, talking about Chris Finch as well. Like, I think they did. I think they got this right.
Yeah, they very clearly look different and more organized and confident on the court.
And he runs some very creative plays.
Yeah, and I don't know how much of that lasts. When D'Lo broke free for the go-ahead basket with, like, 10 seconds left or whatever, some of that was luck and just a broken coverage by Utah, but also some of it's design.
Actually,
right?
You know what? Kisang had a great tweet about that, and he contrasted another, I think it was against Phoenix, and that one, and he did a side-by-side. And in both plays, the double team follows Towns, who goes to center court.
Yeah.
And so they're like, we can't let Cat get the ball. And then D'Lo takes off inside, and he's wide open. No, I mean, it's a really good play.
And somebody, even if someone rotates over on D'Lo, there's a wide open shooter in the corner two guys went to cover Cat. So, all right, so at least the Wolves are fun. We got our Randy and Cottage Grove mock. And write it down, he's nailed two of the last three. Tevin Jenkins, offensive tackle, Oklahoma State, is who he's going with. And I haven't seen Tevin Jenkins mock to the Vikings very often, which actually makes me feel even better about Randy's mock. Yeah. Maybe he's onto something here.
I don't know if it makes me feel better. I don't know if I've seen him on a big board near the top 15 picks at all.
That's not where Randy had him.
Randy
is trading back
his vaccination cards. That's all I want to talk about.
What's your dedication to getting healthy? Have you
my vaccination cards in my wallet? That's my dedication. It's not in my stomach.
Good talk today, boys. Write that down. Predictions tomorrow on Mackie and Judd. You can always find fresh episodes multiple days a week of Judd's Hockey Show on the Mackie and Judd podcast feed and the Score North MN YouTube channel. Click that subscribe button and spread the word about your favorite Minnesota sports talking head trio here. See you guys tomorrow.